What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Mongols Podcast. I'm Mike, with me is Kev and Josh. Coming up on today's show, we'll talk player signings, or lack thereof, and we take your questions. Let's go!
Can you believe that, guys?
No, I mean, that is the craziest sequence of events we've seen in quite a period of time.
In the top right corner, gentlemen, out to the middle, back to
you can tell it's the off season because my let's go just comes weak.
Like that was gonna be my joke too. I was like,
it's really, really bad. Guys, what's going on? I feel like, you know, not that this has become like a support group of any sorts, but like I know it's only been 2 weeks since we've talked, but it feels like forever. So what's going on, Kev? What's going on in Tennessee?
Yeah, I gave you a teaser of my day before off air. Today, the big day, I got my first proper like tree for Christmas time.
You're an adult now.
I'm an adult now. I mean, that is one of the lines. I mean, if I can make a list of all the things that make you an adult, I mean, getting a proper tree would be on there. Probably like learning to like olives. Like no kid likes olives. Probably, right? Learning to like olives. Like there are certain things where it's like, oh, you're an adult, you like olives. So growing up we never had a real tree.
That's your list, liking olives and getting a Christmas tree.
Growing up we never had a real tree, and me and Riley, my girlfriend, wanted a real tree this year, and like a big tree. And so we never done it before. We go to this lot, we get it, but we don't have like a car or a vehicle that's kind of set up for this. Like we don't have a truck, we don't even have a car with like those racks on it. We just have a car, a small one at that. And so, you know, we kind of get this big 7-foot tree up on the roof and we're tying it down, and usually we take the highway, but that was out of the question. So, you know, we're driving on these back roads, I'm holding on a rope, you know, looking out the rearview mirror, making sure the tree isn't falling. And you know, we finally get it in, and you know, get it up the 3 flights of stairs that we live in, a 3rd-floor apartment, and then it's Riley's in there right now tying the screws down to tighten it in. So it's there, it's in the house, and it smells nice, but yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, I don't do real trees. That's,
for that reason,
don't mess with that. I feel like it's every other generation. Like if your parents had a real tree, you're like, I'm good. If your parents doesn't have a real tree, it also I think depends on kids as well. If you have kids, I feel like a lot of parents are like, oh, we need a real tree, we need to have that experience. Like, nah, we have an we have a house now, but we have 10-foot ceilings, and we have our old tree from our old apartment, which is only like a 6-foot tree, so it just looks so small. We set it up and like put the decorations on it, and it looks so sad, like this tiny tree in this giant room with 10-foot ceilings. So I think once the season's over and all the fake trees go on sale, we're gonna get a new one.
Yeah, we've had the same fake tree for I don't know how many years. There was a period where we used to go, my wife's family, they would drive out to like the middle of nowhere and cut down trees, like cut down a tree. And we did that for a while growing up as kids. And yeah, for some reason, our mom, I don't know if she became allergic to them or what it was. So we just had to start getting fake trees. So we had fake trees here. But Kevin, you know, you mentioned like the adult thing. I'm like, you know, I don't ever really plan anything more than like a few months in advance. And now that we have sort of all the space, I was like, you know, what would be like fun, like we should just grow our own Christmas trees. So I actually got like seeds. It's gonna take like 10 years, but like I don't think I've ever done anything besides have kids that like has a payoff 10 years down the road. So I'm like, I took these seeds, I soaked them, they're sitting in plastic bags in our fridge, and this spring I'll take them out and put them in pots, and I'm gonna plan on doing like 5 each year, so then we'll have our pick. But literally like Christmas Eve, we can walk out and just be like, we like that one, chop it down, drag it into the house Griswold style, and off you go. So
one clarifying question for your story there. You said that you guys used to go to the middle of nowhere and cut down a tree. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a tree farm, right? Like, it wasn't no trespassing sign. Like, go at the dead of night.
We would go into the national forests, yeah, under the cover of darkness, and
the
and
tree
cut down
bandit
a tree.
Strikes again.
That's right. Yeah, there's all these articles about us, you know, in the middle of PA. No, so none of that. But yeah, so, you know, that's sort of what's going on with us. Not a ton going on with the team, per se. You know, we were expecting to have some player announcements last week. Basically, November 30th was the deadline for teams to exercise player options. And we knew there was a number of Hounds that were on options going into this season. And the Hounds made, at the time, what seemed like a surprising announcement to exercise none of the options. So for a period, which extends through now, the only player that they have signed is Chevy Walsh. Now, the news is come out that the Hounds are trying to work with a number of the players to sign them to two-year contracts. So they let the option expire, which the option is just for 1 year. And, you know, we talked to Coach Lilly, and he talked about how he really likes to try to get players on two-year contracts so that it's building something. You're not expecting a lot of turnover. You have some consistency year over year. Guys, you know, Josh, what was your initial reaction when you heard that we picked up none of the options? Do you think this is a good move to try to get guys on two-year deals, or do you think we should have tried to lock guys down so they can't look around? What are you thinking?
I'm thinking it's a good idea, mostly because what we've seen in this league, especially when it was third division, so, you know, all the years before, it felt like a rotating door for talent. As soon as someone got even a little bit good, they kind of, like, you know, split. Or they just, you know, a lot of people go into different clubs, and there's only, like, a handful of people who stick around. So the idea of actually having some continuity between seasons and be able to grow players and have multiple years with them sounds great to me. I mean, it's something that I look forward to seeing if it works out, that we can actually pull it off. Because yeah, turnover is one of our biggest nightmares. I mean, it always feels like a rebuilding year.
Yeah. I mean, there's that psychological aspect, and Kev, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this in terms of, you sign a guy to a one-year deal, and that tries to encourage him to perform well so that you sign him to another year deal. You don't get comfortable. But then there's also the flip side of knowing that you're part of something that is bigger than just one season. You know, do you have any thoughts on sort of that psychological side of things?
Yeah, I mean, that and also, I mean, trying to remember once again that these people are, you know, humans off the pitch as well. I mean, some of the players this season had kids, you know, they're starting families and all that kind of stuff. You know, if you're in that position, I would imagine it's a lot nicer to hear, you know what, you have a 2-3 year contract, you know, and you don't need to worry about, you know, where you're going to feed your kid next year, or where you're going to, you know, raise a family and all that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, thinking from a human perspective, I kind of like seeing longer contracts as well. But yeah, I mean, as well as kind of feeling a part of something bigger. I think that makes sense. The 1 year contract, I don't know. Beyond the whole, like, motivation for fighting for a new contract, I can't see any other positives beyond that. I mean, maybe from a club perspective, you know, if the player's not performing, then fine, you don't have to pay him again. But yeah, I don't know. I'm a fan of longer contracts. I'm happy that they're kind of, I don't know. I don't want to say taking their time on this, but it feels like they're, you know, if they're not ready to make a decision, they're not just going to pull the trigger for no, you know, reason on this, which I think is good.
Yeah. The flip side to what you just said, though, is if you get a player that you think is promising, then you could potentially get them at a discount, knowing that you get them this year, and if you're able to develop them, then they're still under contract for next year before you have to, you know, give them a payday. In terms of, you know, you mentioned it'd be nice to hear something. We had some discussions, and it sounded like things were really, really close and that we might have had some announcements of player signings today. That turned out to not be the case, but I wouldn't be surprised if we have some by the end of this week and start to get a picture of what's going on here. You know, as we were heading into the show, we put out on Twitter if anybody had any questions or anything in particular they wanted us to talk about, and you guys came through with a lot of different things. Our buddy Phil Grooms of the STL Soccer Report and the new USL show asked which players could return and be a perfect fits for Lily Ball, which, Kev, you mentioned you don't like the term Lily Ball.
No, it just feels weird. And I have no, like, logical defense for why I think it's
it'll
a
grow
bad
on
term.
You.
Yeah. But I just it doesn't feel Lily Ball. I don't like it.
I think it's just something that has been used pretty widely amongst USL reporters for a few years now, and now it just sort of has transitioned its way into our home because he is our new manager. But let's do this.
I mean,
rather
have you
than
heard that, have you heard that term be, or like that way of speaking be associated with like any other manager ever? Like, I can't, like, you know.
I mean, not exactly that, but we have heard stuff like Fergie time, that kind of stuff. Like, there's phrases that come about that are just kind of like representative of that person and that, you know, style.
I'd say if you say like tiki taka, everybody thinks of Pep.
Yeah, but that's a term that was not made for Pep.
You know.
Yeah. He doesn't own that.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, that's fair. So let's do this. Rather than go through, you know, a whole litany of every player that we think from the Hounds could be a good fit for, you know, lack of better term, Lily Ball. Let's each go through and we'll pick one player. We can't each pick the same player that we think would be a good fit. And for the sake of the argument, the way that I will try to define Lily Ball, and this may not match up with, you know, what other people think of Lily Ball, I would say is a team that is defensively sound, but also can transition and be offensively potent. It's not a top-heavy team in that it's a ton of attacking and no defense. It's definitely built from the back. And as Coach Lily mentioned, it's a team that he wants to have possession of the ball. So with that in mind, you know, a possession-based team that likes to go from the back, defensive-minded, let's go through and pick one player from the Hounds' current squad that we think would be a good fit. And you can't pick Chevy Walsh because he's already on the team. So, Kev, you just sort of rolled your eyes. So I'm going to start with you on this one.
That's fine. I was actually going to pick Chevy. I mean, because, yeah, I don't know. As a forward, I think he kind of encapsulates what you would want. I mean, he puts a defensive shift in, but simultaneously is also a kind of a bigger body that can kind of hold up the ball and bring other players into play. So I'm excited to see what happens out of Chevy next year. But I would also like kind of add to your description of God, now I'm going to use it, Lily Ball.
Join,
you know,
the dark
in
side.
In the interview that we did with him, he kind of mentioned a couple times, you know, how he likes to play a couple different systems, and given certain situations, he likes for his players to have the intelligence to kind of figure out problems for themselves out on the pitch. And so I would kind of add to that, you know, players that are adaptable and are intelligent. And I think, I mean, okay, so I thought about this question before we started, too. I feel like a lot of our answers would have just been players that, like, are good, and we wanted to see them back anyway. So this definitely fits in that. But Jamal Jack, for me, was arguably one of our best players last season. And, you know, at center back, he was the heart of our defense. And I think he's a very intelligent and adaptable player. I mean, I think you know, you could probably even use him in a defensive midfielder position. You know, he's good on the ball. We've seen him carry it out a couple times. He can make a pass for sure. And he's a leader. I mean, so yeah, I mean, I think he's a great player no matter what kind of system or, you know, coach he plays under. But, you know, he's adaptable, he's intelligent, and he's one of our best defensive players. So that's my pick.
Josh, how about you? What do you think?
Solto. I feel like that is a player that is, you know, he can be defensive, obviously, but he also has good offensive abilities. So he kind of fits the bill there. He might be a little bit smaller of a player than I think when I think of Lily Ball, but he definitely has the skill there. And a little bit more to what Kevin was saying is I feel like Lily's going to be able to use any player that's good and who's coachable, who can follow direction. So really any player I feel like could fit into his system as long as they're willing to take his recommendations and, you know, work on the skills that he wants them to work on.
Yeah. And Kev.
Yeah, I was going to jump in and say I agree with everything you just said, Josh. Plus, I would almost argue with the whole kind of height thing, I agree that maybe his stature isn't as big as you would expect. But I do recall, you know, he can win his battles. I mean, he would win a couple aerial duels. He would kind of get dirty and get in there and win balls back. So I think he plays a little bigger than his frame. But yeah, I mean, everything else, I completely agree with.
Yeah, Solto was actually going to be my pick. So thanks, Josh.
Yoink.
But I think he's one, too, that when we talked to him during the season, you know, he mentioned that he felt that he still has a lot to learn, and that coming out of the college system, he felt that he worked well with Brandt. He was adaptable. And I think that being open and not having sort of an ego of any sense and really being willing to try different things is something that Coach Lilly's going to look for. So I think Solto is one that I'm really hoping that we're able to re-sign and bring him back next year. I will say that, you know, aside from Solto and Jack, I think Kevin Kerr, I think he's one where I know that, you know, we've talked about whether or not we think that he's had the best performances game in and game out. But I think that a lot of times this year he was played out of position. And I think that the few times that we saw him the few times that we saw him in the middle of the field playing as an attacking midfielder with forwards in front of him and wings on the side, where he can distribute the ball, he can lead the attack. I think.
Yeah, but I mean, you just described a formation that has like four attackers. I mean, you know, you said four words plural in front of him and wingers that get beyond. I mean,
You play a 4-4-2, and if he's sitting as the attacking midfielder, then he has two forwards and two wingers. All I'm saying is that Kerr has been one to show that A, he will drop back and he'll play defensive and he'll get dirty if he has to. He has really good distribution when he's played in the right positions. And again, the few times that we saw him in that attacking midfield role, I thought he looked good. Kev, I think you agreed with us that he looked good in cases.
Yeah, on top of all this too, I mean, I would agree. Like, Kerr is an intelligent player. You know what I mean? And he's an adaptable player and all that kind of stuff. My only slight critique with Kerr is I think sometimes my guess with how Lilly is going to want to play, shape and organization is going to be very important. And I think one or two times last season, especially at the end of the last season, Kirk can kind of get, you know, it can be suspect of roaming a bit too much when we're out of possession and maybe being caught out of position once or twice. I mean, he can adapt and be drilled into that kind of stuff. But yeah.
It also depends on who else is around him. I mean, if he has the pieces where he doesn't feel like he has to drop back to the defense to get the ball, then, you know, he might be better off. So we'll see. That's sort of our thoughts on who we think, based on the current Hounds roster, which is Chevy Walsh, but I should say the 2017 roster, who we think would be a good fit for coming back and playing with Coach Lilly. Let us know what you think. Kev, you have one more.
Just
you
one more kind of slid in. Well, I mean, I think it's an obvious thing that we're all thinking. I mean, Herzog, with how he kind of closes down and runs, and you know, he's as much of a contribution in defense as he is in offense. I mean, he's kind of an obvious fit too. But I think we're all thinking it's just, you know, anyway.
Thanks, Kev. One thing we will say is, don't be surprised. You know, Coach Lilly mentioned, and we talked about it a little bit, the idea that we could see some Rochester players coming over and playing for the Hounds this season. News broke this past week that Rochester is actually going to be on hiatus this year, which is not something you want to see. You know, I know that they're rivals, but we've said time and time again that we like playing against our rivals. And this is not only just a rival. This is an old guard team. This is a team that, you know, was the only USL team to win the US Open Cup. You know, pre-MLS entry. They won it all just a few years ago. And so to see the team, you know, the USL show covered it pretty well about the connotation that hiatus has and whether or not that actually means they're going to come back. Josh, you've been around the league a while and you've seen teams sort of come and go. What was your first thought when you heard that Rochester was going to be going on hiatus next year?
It sucks. I mean, like you said, the old guard team. So this is something that's kind of important, I think, to the history of USL and American soccer in general. It feels like they have honestly, they have the first soccer-specific stadium. Everyone says Crew does, which they're the first ones in MLS to have a soccer-specific stadium. But Rochester had one first, actually. So they were that first stadium in America. They just have, like, the biggest history, I feel like, as far as teams that have been around the whole time. Because you have, you know, like Bethlehem Steel, the name itself has been around longer and that kind of stuff. But Rochester Rhinos actually have, you know, the longest running club and that kind of stuff in pro soccer. So it is really disappointing to see. It is nice that, you know, they're trying still. They're like, you know, hey, it's just a year or two hiatus. We're, you know, working on things. So I hope that's true. Because, yeah, it would suck to see the fat unicorns leave. I mean, that's... they need to stay around.
The little underhanded compliment there. Yeah. Kev, you know, are you at all fearful that the Hounds are going to basically become Rochester South now that their players don't have a place to go?
No, not fearful. I mean, I think Josh summed it up well. I was going to say last week, but last time we talked. You know, once they become Hounds players, you know, it might take us a week to get used to it. But after that, I think we'll all be on board with it. Yeah, I'm not worried about it at all. And at the same time, I mean, you know, we have some decent players here, which I'm sure Lily will be looking forward to working with. So it's not like he'll want to just bring in the entire team and do a complete, you know, line change. So yeah, I'm not worried about that. I mean, this, I don't know. I don't want to go off on a tangent too much here, but I think this kind of, with Rochester dropping out, put it in the larger context of how some of these teams, some of these new teams, what, Nashville, right? And Nashville just coming in and then also making a bid for the MLS. I think, would you put it in the context of some of these kind of brand new teams and then just wanting to pay their way into to the MLS? I don't know. It kind of, you know, it begs the question, okay, what makes a club successful? What makes a club something that you want to be a part of? And I think it's always going to be dedicated and passionate fans. You know, and it's, you know, Rochester didn't have the highest attendance. I mean, so we averaged 500 more people on average in last year's attendance than Rochester, which is weird because Rochester is statistically just a better historic club as far as winning things go. And so you would think, you know, here's a team that's doing it on the pitch. But you know what? They're kind of struggling for other reasons and they have to fall out. And so, I mean, it's something that is kind of sad and weird. And then you put it in the context of these other MLS teams that just saying, hey, we have a pool of money. Let's just be an MLS city. I just feel like it's the wrong way to go as well, because it's like, well, you know, money doesn't make fans, players. I mean, sorry, money doesn't make great clubs. Players don't make great clubs. You know, a core group of dedicated fans make great clubs. And I feel bad for the Rochester fans that no longer have a team next year. But it's something I think each and every club needs to be conscious and aware of. It's not, you know, at the forefront of every single club's mind should be, what can we do to, you know, get a better connection with the community and the culture of the city that we're situated in and the fans that come and watch us every week, because those are the most important, you know, aspect of all this. I don't know. I mean, I'm completely naive with the whole Rochester thing. I'm sure they have a very large core group of fans, but, you know, I think maybe when you start losing sight of certain things like that, that's when you can get into trouble. And I'm wondering if the similar things happen in the MLS. New teams or the new USL teams that want to make MLS bids or other. Went on off a huge tangent, but I was just thinking about that in the context of the question.
It's all good, Kev. We got all the time in the world for you. You just keep on going. No. And I totally agree. The interesting thing was that they actually announced that there will still be USL games played at Rochester's home stadium, which it's not clear who is going to be playing there.
New York Red Bulls, maybe, too? That would be okay, I think.
Yeah. How far is Rochester from New Jersey, though?
I mean, it's probably a ways away, but it's closer than a lot of other places. And I don't think a lot of the Red Bulls fans will give a crap if they play the two team over there. Whereas if, like, the Hounds said, like, hey, we're having a home game at Rochester, be like, F you. No, you're not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Steel Army's not going to bus it to Rochester for a home game.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. So that concerns me, but I'm hoping it's probably like an MLS 2 team or something like that.
Yeah. And we mentioned, you know, one of the other, I don't want to say sad things, but definitely something that strikes at the heart of sort of the Hounds is that Rochester is, as we said, an old guard team. And as we see sort of the development of the USL, you're going to see, you know, more and more of, I don't want to say the old guard teams falling away, but you're going to see, obviously, the league is being overtaken by non-old guard teams. You have more of these teams like Louisville, like Cincy, like Nashville, like, you know, now we have North Carolina FC that's coming into league. Atlanta's bringing a team. So I think, you know, I think 5-10 years down the road, USL is going to be a completely different beast. And honestly, I could see it at some point rivaling MLS, but we're not there yet. That whole prospect excites me, I think. But what I don't want to see is a number of these teams that have been around since the start of the league. I shouldn't say start of the league, but have been around for some time. The old guard teams that have these fan bases that are rooted in the city. And you know, they operate under, you know, different means as some of these other clubs. I don't want to see them fade away. And so to see Rochester fall away is disappointing. You know, obviously there was the old guard shield that was introduced this year that Rochester was part of. Our buddy Boston from Cincy Soccer Talk asked, you know, what are your views on Rochester as fans of an old guard team? Do you like the statement from the old guard shield? So obviously with Rochester being part of the old guard shield, they're not going to be playing next season. So what does that mean for the Hounds' chances of winning the old guard shield since there's now one less team? The old guard shield's response was basically they got together the supporters groups from the various teams and came up with the conclusion that Rochester is going to remain in the shield upon their return to the league, assuming that the hiatus lasts no longer than 2 seasons. So as long as they're only gone 2 seasons, they're welcome back. If and when the club returns, it must be the same linear club as it currently exists. While the name and ownership may change, the club must actively retain and acknowledge its history and be considered the same club by a majority of the relevant soccer community. So this can't be somebody coming in and saying, we're a brand new club, forget everything that the Rhinos ever did, we're just going to ignore that, this is us. Which is something that you often see with new ownership. It's, we want to make a new thing, we don't want to be associated with a team that went on hiatus, all of that. The third thing was the club must remain and host their home fixtures in the greater Rochester market. So this can't be somebody that says we bought Rochester, we moved them to Austin or wherever. And if the conditions are not met, then the member supporter groups are going to meet once again to figure out how to proceed. So I will say that I think all of these things are fair, what they came up with. I love the transparency in what's going on. We're going to talk about transparency in a little bit. So I honestly, I have no issues with this. I feel bad that there was a shield that was made that has a Rochester spot on it. And not even, you know, 4 or 5 months later after getting the shield, they're not participating in competing for it. But Josh, was there anything that sort of jumped out from you here that you necessarily disagree with in terms of what was decided?
Nothing I disagree with. I just to voice a little bit or speak a little bit more on the whole keeping their lineage. A good example of this, I think, would be like the Portland Timbers. They were a NEASL team way back in like 1975 or something like that. They were a club, and then they kind of stopped being in existence for a good like 10, 15 years. And then they came back, and they retained the culture, the club. Like, they kind of like, even though it was new ownership, they you know, had the name, they had all that feel, and the fans kind of recognized them as the same team. So even if it is like only a couple of years or even 1 year, if a new ownership does come in, I feel like there's definitely a possibility that they will recognize that history. And it's something that they should be proud of. So I would hope they would.
Well, and I think it's something you don't want to turn your back on those fans that, you know, still associate with the Rhinos.
I mean, even if they do change their name or something like that, this wouldn't be the first name change for the Rhinos. They were the Raging Rhinos before, the Rochester Raging Rhinos, and then they changed it to the Rhinos. So, I mean, it's happened. But I hope, you know, we still get them in the league and it's the same feel as the old team.
Yeah. Kev, do you have any sentiments on sort of the old guard shield and the implications for not having Rochester involved?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing, it'd be kind of cool. I mean, Josh, you just mentioned like the 10, 15 year break or whatever coming back. Like, it'd be kind of cool if they just opened that up to like allow it to be that long, as far as like, you know, considering them back in. But other than that, everything seems, yeah, completely fair and reasonable. Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, I lost my train of thought as to what your original question was and what we were talking about. And the only other thing I remembered, I mean, going back to the attendance numbers for 2017, the only non, like, two team, so like LA Galaxy 2, you know, OCB, the only other team that finished with lower attendance record than Rochester was Charlotte. So, I mean, that kind of goes to show you that, you know, and these are decent teams. What, fourth and fifth in the Eastern Conference? Yeah. But anyway, I hope there is still interest and bring them back as a club. You never want to see that go out of your community. So yeah, all the best to Rochester and their fans.
And I do think that somebody is going to come in and they're going to put together a Rochester team at some point in the future. I feel like the USL is just growing so quickly. Soccer in America is just growing so quickly. And we've seen MLS is going to cap who they let in. And then it's just going to become, you know, really a shell game of who's willing to pay the most money to have an MLS team. And we're just going to up and move them. And we're seeing that right now with Columbus. And that's just, it sucks. It's terrible. But once they've maxed it out, everybody else is going to be looking to get a team somehow. And I think that Rochester, with the history that they've had, with the history of success that they've had, it would be foolish for somebody not to take a look at that market and say, hey, soccer's blowing up everywhere. Let's give this thing in Rochester another shot. And I think if you do that, then it would be wise to tap into, you know, the existing team, similar to, you know, Bethlehem Steel in some ways, try to capitalize on the name Bethlehem Steel from the history standpoint of it. So do the same thing with Rochester and see what comes of it. So yeah, that's our thoughts on that. Boston, thank you for the question. If you guys have any additional thoughts on, you know, what you think Rochester's hiatus means for, you know, the Hounds, what it means for the league, just your thoughts in general about teams going on hiatus and whether you think that it's just a natural part of the growth of the league or not, let us know, because this is a conversation that we like to have. Moving on here to some other listener questions. Andrew Slater, which is at Rue41013 on Twitter, he said, USSF elections, perhaps? I guess there's like an implied question mark there in terms of things that we should talk about. So for those of you who don't know, basically the United States Soccer Federation is in the process of essentially finding a new president. It came out today that Sunil Gulati has decided not to run. He basically had the option to run for another four-year term, and he has declined it. He came under a lot of heat because obviously the U.S. men's team did not qualify for the 2018 World Cup. That seemed to be the tipping point, but you know, he's involved with a lot of the decisions of, you know, who the coaches should be. He works on a lot of the contracts in terms of, you know, men's team, women's team. He deals with FIFA. He deals with all the different federations. So he's basically going to step aside, and this opens the door for somebody new to come in. The voting, you know, just to give everybody a little bit of background, because I think this whole process is shrouded in a lot of secrecy, which is why there's a lot of interest at this point, is because a lot of people just have no idea what goes on. So just to fill you guys in a little bit, and then we'll sort of get into our thoughts on it. The way that the process works in terms of voting for this president, the first thing that I should say is that the president currently is a volunteer position. Gulati got paid nothing to be the president of USSF. And actually, I read somewhere that I think his day job is he's a professor of economics at some college in New York. It might be Columbia. Whether he's still doing that now, at one point during his tenure, that's what he did. And so he actually missed a few games because he was busy teaching his economics class so he could get paid. Now, you know, he gets other perks like getting to go to all the games and things like that. But yeah, it is an unpaid position. Outside of that, it's not entirely clear what the president actually does. I will say that the CEO of U.S. Soccer makes $700,000 a year. That's one thing we do know. But what the CEO does versus what the president does, that's one thing that I think a lot of people are going to try to uncover as we head towards this election. Because I think a lot of people have ideas of, oh, you know, this guy would be great for the position, or this woman would be great for this position. But honestly, I don't feel like I can sit here and pass judgment on who I think would be great or not without actually knowing what the position entails. You know, what job are we trying to fill here? And then that will allow us to determine who the best candidate is. So anyway, back to how voting works. Basically, this February coming up, the date is February 8th through the 11th. Is when the USSF will get together for their annual meetings and they'll decide a bunch of things. This year, they're also going to decide the president. In terms of voting for who the new president will be, there is a youth council that gets 25.8% of the vote. There's an adult council, which is 25.8% of the vote. Professional council, which is 25.8% of the vote. You're seeing a pattern here. The athletes get 20% of the vote, and then there's a miscellaneous 2.6%. that also get a say in the vote. So everybody sort of comes together and there's different councils and they'll all weigh everything and then they'll vote for who they think the new USSF president should be. That's sort of the process. In terms of who's running, it seems like the laundry list just keeps growing of people who are throwing their names into a hat. Kev, I know you're really pulling for Kyle Martino. He is your fave. I would say that, you know, based on what I've seen, he seems to be the one that's at least trying to put together the most public plan. I know he's sort of running on a platform of transparency. He wants to make the president position paid, which, you know, makes sense if you're running for the position. But he's actually putting his plans out there. Like I've heard him say, like, hey, let's try to get, you know, at every playground where there's a basketball hoop, like, put a goal under the basketball hoop. You don't have to build fields. Like, you instantly have a futsal court, or every school already has a built-in futsal court. Just give them goals, and the kids can play there. And so he's also, you know, gone out and publicly said, I don't have all the answers. That's not what I'm running on. I'm trying to find the best people that will help us do this together. I'm not advocating for Kyle. He's just been the most vocal with what he thinks about, you know, what should happen. And so that's what I'm just sort of regurgitating what he said. The Men in Blazers actually just did a really great live show. I wasn't expecting it. And I was like doing some, you know, just mindless yard work, and I put it on, and it was a great episode. It's called What Happened, and they had Alexi Lawless and Hercules Gomez on, and, you know, regardless of your thoughts on either Alexi or Herc, they had a really great discussion about why they thought the U.S. men's team didn't qualify for the World Cup, and they said, you know, who they thought would make a good president, and they actually put out the idea of, like, look, we got to get through this mess of not having this transparency. And they actually pitched, let's do a live debate and learn what these people actually think this position is and hold them accountable. And so that may be something that could be really good that comes out of all of this, is this more transparency and having a debate and actually hearing what is it that the president actually does. So I highly encourage everybody, go listen to it. Again, the show is called What Happened, from Men in Blazers. It was just a couple weeks ago. Guys, I just sort of talked for a really long time. Josh, what are your random thoughts? Any thoughts on this whole process?
I mean, first off, I guess we gotta talk if it's a good thing or not that he's stepping down. And I feel like the fact that the United States men's national team didn't make the World Cup is kind of the litmus. I mean, if they don't make it, then something's wrong. I don't know if it's the president's fault. I don't know how much he actually has involvement in that. But I think it's also interesting to talk about, you know, like we've talked about a little bit earlier, was the state of MLS and the USL situation and the NESL situation. Things are kind of a mess right now. They're in transition, but a messy, messy transition. It doesn't feel like there's really a good plan. So I feel like some of this has to fall on his shoulders. So I'm glad he's stepping down. I honestly don't know about the replacement or even how that should go. But I do think as much in the spotlight as it can possibly be is the answer. So we do have answers and are able to keep them accountable.
Yeah. The one thing, you know, the counter argument to the fact that the men's team didn't make the World Cup is the fact that the women's team have won multiple World Cups. And so you can sort of attribute that to him as well. But the counter argument to that is that he was integral to hiring the most recent men's coaches, you know, Klinsmann and Bruce Arena, and some, you know, argued that he didn't pull the trigger on either of those as quickly as he probably should have to get some new blood in there and some new ideas. Kev, is there anything, you know, you sort of read through here and you hate on Kyle Martino? Are you planning on running for president? Is that what we're going for here?
It's funny you should ask, Mike. I'm glad I have this platform.
This huge platform.
No, I mean, okay, like, just quickly, let's have some fun with the whole Kyle Martino thing. I know nothing. Well, not nothing. Very little of his policies. I like to hate on him because of his personality that he plays on the freaking, you know, Premier League shows. One of his three pillars, apparently, is progress. Well, no crap. I mean, what else are you there for? You know what? No. I'm not going to make progress. I'm not running on that platform. Anyway,
make U.S. soccer great again, Kevin.
That's his platform. That's his platform.
But, I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's tough. I mean, it is weird. Because it's like, how much does the USSF really lean on the presidency if they expect this guy to also be, you know, teaching classes like the last guy? You know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah, how much do we lean into it? I mean, I do think you brought up the really good point is it shouldn't be overlooked that how well the women's side are doing. I mean, that's a very important thing as well. And Josh, while I agree with everything you mentioned as far as like, the kind of messiness with the whole USL MLS stuff going on right now, I think the only other maybe potential counter-argument to that is, you know, there is an increase in, like, new teams popping up. My guess is there is more money now. There's more, you know, attendance is probably going up. Now, how much of that is given, you know, as credit for, like, the USSF and the presidency? Maybe none. Maybe this is just a kind of global cultural, oh, everyone's getting into it because now all of a sudden, you know, the TV contracts and the Premier League's going up. You know what I mean? So it could be that, but I don't know.
Honestly, that was going to be my argument because I was stunned. There are guys that I know who are a couple years older than me that are like diehard football guys. And I just found out that they now all have Premier League teams and they sit on Facebook and they like, you know, live stream all of the games on Saturday mornings. I think a lot of the popularity in soccer comes from the TV deals that brings the Premier League over here, honestly.
Deal was, you know, brokered by someone. And I do think, if I understand correctly, that there is some involvement with MLS and like the whole USSF. Like, I don't know about how much, but they might have a hand in that somehow. So yeah. Maybe they do have some things to be proud of in that aspect. But yeah, it's one of the things where I just don't know if you can really overlook the men not making the national team. It's such a big deal, and it has every single year that the World Cup goes on and the USA are in it, it spikes interest in soccer in America, and it really does have a big impact.
I mean, a very kind of brief thing that I always think about in this I'm biased because of my, you know, education. But I mean, I do think the USSF has one of a more difficult thing on its hands, and that is the sheer geography of soccer in America. I mean, in the USL show.
Just hold on, real quick. Just to clarify, by saying your education, you meant because you study geography.
Yes. Yeah,
it's not because you're a learned person. Okay.
Because I have a degree.
Yes. I just wanted to help you out there a second. All right, continue.
In the latest USL show over on the BGN network, go check that out when you get a chance. They were talking about like even like the possibility of, you know, they're like being 60 teams in the USL once you split it up into like three different conferences and all that kind of stuff. That's unheard of for any other league in the world, and so a lot of the times they you know, a lot of these other leagues and how they structure them are just they're given a different hand to deal to kind of play with. And so I don't know, this literally just came to me now, and it could be bull crap, but I mean, an interesting maybe case study to look at is everything that's happening in China right now. I mean, China's really trying to grow the soccer culture in their country. They're trying to do that with money right now, just throwing money at everything. I don't know how well it's going, but this is another emerging market with a similar geography as far as it's huge. You know, and then maybe even looking at like Russian leagues and all that kind of stuff and just seeing how they deal with it. But I think it's really difficult for us to kind of compare anything that's going on with MLS or USL with things like in England or Spain or Germany or Italy. I mean, it's, you know, they're not dealing with 60 teams in a conference. it's a unique thing that we have to deal with, and it's a hard one. I don't think there's easy solutions.
Yeah. So, you know, we don't pretend to have any of the answers. And like I said, there's a lot more ambiguity to what's going on than anybody's really going to let on. So hopefully there's going to be, you know, more transparency. Maybe we do get that debate from the Men in Blazers, which I think would be fantastic. Three of the topics that you're really going to want to pay attention to if you're following this is the first one is everybody's talking about equal pay for the women's team. So right now the women's team get paid substantially less than the men's team, even though, you know, they are performing better. And there's a big argument as to why. You know, you could be on the side of, you know, the women are performing, they should be making exactly the same as the men. And there could be, you know, there's less interest in the women's team, which I don't believe that, considering that the women's team came to Pittsburgh and sold out Heinz Field in like 10 minutes. So I think that, honestly, I think that, you know, I know that Pittsburgh has an amateur women's team. I'd love to see us to get a pro women's team as well. Mm-hmm. I think that it could do very well here. But so that's one side of things, and I know the women are really pushing for a lot of influence in this decision. There was a lot of discussion recently about, you know, the Women's World Cup being played on turf, which is just, that's insane. So, you know, that'll play into it. So that's one of the big topics. Pay to play is going to be a huge topic at the youth levels, where, you know, essentially one of the big gateways to get quality coaching and just playing time is that soccer is one of those sports where you have to have money to play at the level where you're going to get decent coaching and decent training. And so how is that going to be addressed to further tap into the massive amount of kids out there that want to partake in this sport? And then the third piece is really that the USSF apparently has $130 million surplus that they're trying to figure out what to do with. And so what people come to the table and propose for doing with that money, I think, is going to be very, very interesting. So three big things to keep an eye on as this whole election process goes through. And you're probably going to be hearing a lot about it here over the next, you know, we're in December and the election is beginning of February. So just the next few months, really, everybody's going to be throwing their hat into the ring and hopefully saying what they have to say so that we all have a good idea about whether or not the Federation's moving in the right direction. So that's that. You know, hopefully, Andrew, that sort of answers your question, kind of, maybe. We talked about it. We didn't really come to
I don't think we can ever provide answers on this show. We can just provide our opinions. I mean, that's the best we can ever do.
Yes, that's true. That's true. So, so thanks again for the question, Andrew. You know, if you have any more, keep them coming. Few other things to talk about here before we get out of here. Big news, Diesel Kiesel is in the Save of the Year race. I know that voting wraps up soon. He's in a very, last time I checked, I think it was like 51-49 he was losing. So get out there and vote. Just go to the uslsoccer.com, click on the Save of the Year, and keep him moving through the pipeline here.
Easier still too. I'm sure you tweeted it out on the Mongols Twitter handle. Just go to our Twitter handle.
Yeah, you could do that as well. So Diesel Kiesel, good luck with that for sure. I've been trying to vote constantly. I think there's something with their system because you're allowed to vote multiple times, but the number of votes never increases. So I'm not saying there's something going on behind the scenes there with the USL, but I'm just saying I've been keeping an eye on it. So yeah. Other news, the Steel Army and the American Outlaws are having their holiday party this Saturday at 7 p.m. at Highmark Stadium. Food, drinks, raffles. If you know that you're going, head over to the Steel Army's Facebook page. You can also just go to steelarmy.com, RSVP to the event. It's not required, but it'd be a good idea to know how many people are coming.
Yeah, it helps with the whole food thing so we know what to expect.
Yeah. Josh, any sort of surprises that you can leak on the show? Or
I mean, no surprises, but if you've ever been to one of the holiday parties, it's us and the American Outlaws throw it. And it's always a great time. I mean, in years past, we've had the viewing party for the MLS final as well during the holiday party. And it's a lot of fun. You just come out and just hang out.
Yeah. So awesome stuff. Head over there. Let them know that you're coming and get there. It's going to be a great time. Otherwise, guys, I think that's it for this one. I'm hoping that, you know, by the next time we get together, that we have some player news so we can actually dissect what's going on. Maybe we'll try to get one of the players on as well. We're trying to get the only player the Hounds have signed right now on with us, but that wasn't able to fall through here for this episode. So maybe here coming up in a few weeks.
Only time we could have said that we had the entire team on the show at one time.
Yeah, I was looking forward to telling him, like, hey, look, you could have your pick of any number you want, man. Like, any number. What's it going to be? You're the only player. Yeah, pick your position, anything you want. But yeah, that will all be changing very, very soon. So that's it from us. We mentioned it a few times. If you're looking for other great soccer podcasts, head over to bgn.fm. We just added the USL show to the family, and their latest show talks all about, as Kevin said, the multiple conferences, which teams should move to MLS and why, whether moving to MLS is a good thing or not, what it means for the USL. It was just a really great discussion. Full disclosure, I'm a producer on the show, so I sort of like sit there and listen to them and send them notes and stuff. But it's really good stuff. Go check that out. You can follow us on Twitter @Mongols. Email us @Mongols@bgn.fm. All the questions this week were fantastic. Keep them coming. We're happy to talk about anything. And if there's anything in particular you want to talk about and you want to come on and talk with us about it, let us know. We're happy to have you on and expand the conversation. Head over to iTunes, subscribe to the show, leave us a review. Otherwise, let us know what you thought about this one. And thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you very, very soon.
Cheers.
Later.
Before you go, please help us to keep doing what we're doing by becoming a supporter of the show. Head over to mongols.com and click on the Become a Supporter button. For as little as $1 per month, just $1, you can help keep the show commercial free while also getting a say in who we interview, the questions we ask, what we talk about, and you can get some sweet gear as well. Thanks again to all of our listeners for your continued support. That's mongols.com. Click on Become a Supporter. Mongols.com. Become a Supporter. Thanks.